The verses Barbara read for us just a few moments ago from 1 Thessalonians are widely considered to be the earliest recorded writings of the Christian church. Before the Gospels, before the Acts of the Apostles, before any of the other letters of Paul, the very first Christian writings were these words, written to the nascent Christian community in Thessalonica, an Aegean seaport and capital city of the region of Macedonia. These words formed a letter of love and encouragement to the saints there. We always give thanks to you, for all of you, and mention you in our prayers, said Paul, constantly remembering your work of faith and labor of love and steadfastness of hope in our Lord Jesus Christ. We owe our being here today in some way to the faith, love, and hope of the Christians in Thessalonica. So I'm grateful for this letter, this first letter of Paul, which draws us back to the earliest ecclesia, the first gatherings of Christians, even before Christianity became a distinct faith, when it was still thinking of itself as just another sect within Judaism. The Thessalonian Christians made it their practice to read aloud Paul's letter whenever the ecclesia gathered, and in so doing, created a permanent relationship with his words and sowed the first seeds of a process that would eventually give us what we know as the New Testament. Paul thanks God for the Thessalonians. He is thankful for their faith, love, and hope because they are beloved by God and chosen by God. Paul knows this to be true because the message of the gospel which he brought to them was received in such power. Their lives have been changed by that power, and the power comes not because of who they are, but because of who God is through in and through them. Apparently, Paul is not the only one who has noticed. You became an example to all the believers in Macedonia and further south in Achaia, Paul writes, tells them. Others are talking about your faith, he says. Others have noticed and taken heart and courage from the way you have lived out your faith. The work of Jesus Christ has made a qualitative distinction in the lives of the Thessalonian believers. Their routines have been transformed by the decisive events of the coming of Jesus into the world, and others have taken notice. They're talking about you all over Macedonia, Paul says. In our culture, we often think of faith as a more private matter between an individual and God. We may indeed prefer such ways of thinking about faith to what seemed to us to be the distorted and loud and angry public faith of some professed Christians in our land. We may prefer to speak of the faith of this church in terms of our ministries or our involvement in the community or in the world. But Paul commends the Thessalonians not for their deeds. He talks to them about their faith, their courage, their hope, their labor of love, and the way they received the word with joy. My pastor friend Tom R. says that the faithfulness Paul commends in the Thessalonians is not a condition, it's not a one-time decision, it is a lifestyle. It is a daily walk that filters every decision and touches every relationship. It is a work, a labor, a life that can be carried only by a hope in the strongest of tomorrows. This past week, as I was thinking about what made the Thessalonian congregation exemplary, I began to think about you, about what people are saying about you. This congregation has a reputation around this country and this denomination, a fact that you may or may not know. Did you know that others have been talking about you? mostly good things, I might say. At a presbytery event last fall, I was talking with an elder from a congregation in Queens who spoke of how much he admired and respected First Church's welcome statement and the fact that we actually kind of lived out that statement instead of just saying it. He said he had a gay son who had said that this was the first church where he felt truly at home. I can count a half dozen other similar conversations in recent months with people around this country, and it is no small thing in this day when the LGBTQ community is once again under siege in this country. They were talking about you, and specifically about one of you in a courthouse in Brooklyn, after watching you accompany a young immigrant through a maze of legal steps, both to protect her safety and to help her navigate strange proceedings in a strange new country. And they said, that church cares about immigrants and refugees, and what a wonderful thing to hear in these days. They were talking about you in Cuba, talking about the friendship bond you have developed with the congregation in Tawasco, about the way you made visitors from that island nation feel welcomed on their visit here, and how you graciously accepted their hospitality when you made a visit there. And they said, those people from First Presbyterian Church in New York are serious about exploring what it means to be partners in Christ's gospel in this world. They were talking about you up at the Institute of Sacred Music at Yale as they were pondering potential candidates they might recommend to us for our music director vacancy. And they said, that church has had such a long passion for the music of the church. They spoke of the Gilmont Organ School and the legacy of Robert Baker and Bill Entrecon and the remarkable singers and musicians who have filled this house with splendor. And they said, that First Presbyterian Church will continue to thrive musically because it has worship at its heart. Your reputation was a topic of conversation in Santa Fe last month at the meeting of the Movable Feast Preaching Group. As people noted the strength and reputation of this church in our denomination and spoke of how important it is to attract excellent leadership moving forward. They said, that church is a beacon of light, a faithfully progressive voice in the midst of a culture that seems to have lost its way much of the time. They need someone to continue to enhance and encourage that strength. They're talking about you. Not in Macedonia, of course, but in Queens and Brooklyn and Cuba and New Haven and Santa Fe and other places where your reputation has spread. They're talking about you. Now, most often in those times and places when they are talking about you, they are talking about things you've done, your deeds, your outward manifestations of life together. What's striking in reading 1 Thessalonians is how Paul says the reputation of the Thessalonian Christians grew because of their strong and unwavering faith. And it made me wonder, what would they be saying about your faith, about our faith together? Faith, remember, has not only personal but public dimensions as well. For some faith communities, it's manifest only by what they oppose. But for others, it's by what they express positively about what they believe. If I were framing the public dimension of this congregation's faith, I would always speak of that more positive spirit. Maybe people see that in us. If they are talking about our faith, there are several things I would hope that they are saying about us. First, that we're a people whose worship of God is full of joy and gladness, that we sing and pray and lift up our hearts and voices with unselfconscious praise. Second, that we are a people full of hope and confidence as we face the future, not so much because of our own strength or our resources or out of any incurable optimism, but because we trust the endless provision of God and the promises we claim in Jesus Christ. Third, I hope they're saying that we are a people willing to engage in what Paul calls the labor of love, extending compassion and kindness toward one another and toward all God's children, because we have known the extensive sacrificial love of Jesus Christ. Fourth, that we are courageous, willing to take our confidence in God's love and God's best hopes for humankind into the public sphere to fight for justice and equity for those normally pressed to the margins. That we do so because, as students and servants of the gospel of Jesus Christ, we can do nothing less. And finally, I hope that they're saying we're a people beloved by God and called by God, and that our rich personal and collective experience of such grace has in remarkable ways made us more gracious. And you know, they do. I've heard such expressions time and again. It is part of what drew me to you for this interim ministry. I'm grateful beyond words to be able to serve a congregation which, with such a strong and good reputation. I hear the compliments everywhere I go. But I sometimes wonder if we know how fortunate we are, how much we have benefited from God's abundant grace and goodness. I sometimes wonder what reputation this congregation has within its own membership. I sometimes wonder if we realize the part we each have to play in cultivating and continuing to deserve that reputation. So let me ask a question. It's a question a good friend of ours used to ask his congregation, and one worth pondering together. And the question is this: what if there were no First Presbyterian Church in the city of New York? What if this place was not here, occupying this block? What if the place were occupied instead by condos, perhaps, or by another university building, or by a group of stores or restaurants or bars? What would you miss? What would our neighbors miss? The late Dutch theologian Henry Nouwen once wrote about cities and churches: a city without carefully protected empty spaces where one can sense the stillness and the silence from which all words grow, and rest in the stillness from which all actions flow. Such a city is in danger of losing its real center. For one thing, this town would miss the stately architecture and the lively history of a 300-plus-year-old congregation, which dedicated its first structure on this site in January of 1846. Of course, the church's reputation and place in our hearts is more than a building. It is worship, lively and inspiring, and music that stirs our souls. It is the laughter of children and baby and toddler worship or in the hallways of the nursery school, and the thoughtful faith of our members who bring such gifts to our life together. It's the warm and welcoming conversation that greets us when we come through the doors off Fifth Avenue or greet one another at coffee hour in the lobby. It's the countless men and women who come to this church in need of help or a kind word or a welcoming and listening ear. And it's all those folks I mentioned earlier who depend on and count on the work and witness of First Presbyterian Church. If you think about it, the reach of this church is rather remarkable, given our size. It's truly a gift to so many and to many others, and it is worthy of our support. I know there are a lot of good programs and initiatives in this community that are also worthy of support. But here's the thing. Unlike all those other organizations, for us, you are we are the only ones, the only people who can make it possible for this church to fulfill its calling in the coming years. Unlike the museums or the symphony or the ballet or the schools, we have only the members of this church to ask for support. There's no wider audience of benefactors. There's no broad number of people beyond this congregation to whom we can appeal. There is just you. Just you. So every one of you is important and essential to our continuing ability to thrive. Each one of us is responsible for our reputation, as it were. We must be as generous as we possibly can to support God's work through First Church. Next Sunday, February 24th, you will have an opportunity to respond. It is our Commitment Sunday. This past week, we mailed stewardship information and a pledge card to every church household. There are other pledge cards in the pew racks today. If you don't end up with a packet and you want one, let us know and we'll get it to you. We need every household, to respond and to do so in a timely manner. It is that simple and it's that important. We have a reputation, after all, one that is rooted in God's free grace, and yet, ironically, one we must continue to earn every day. Every day.